Case number 20-3351, Brian Bash versus Texton Financial Corporation. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Warren, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you and good morning, Your Honors. Daniel Warren on behalf of the trustee, Brian Bash. Textron says its active participation in a five-year-long, $100-plus million investment scam that ultimately deprived thousands of people of their investments is not relevant on this appeal, as long as Textron had a perfected lien. Now, there are three separate reasons why Textron is wrong about that, and the district court erred below because, among other things, it did not allow two of those theories to go to the jury. First, the district court did not allow the jury to consider the basic question of whether Textron's lien was valid under the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. And the specific question before this court now is whether Textron's bad faith, its egregious bad faith, plays a part in the analysis. Or in other words, do good faith or bad faith considerations matter here? We should start, I believe, with the text of the statute that defines a valid lien. Under section 133601M of Ohio's Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, or UFTA, a valid lien must be, and I quote, effective against the holder of a judicial lien subsequently obtained. So in other words, Your Honors, the text of this statute is asking whether the security interest at issue, here Textron's lien, would prevail, whether it would win in a priority dispute against a later judicial lien. And that means we turn to the UCC, just as this court held we should in Thermo Credit versus DCA, because it is the UCC that governs priority disputes between competing lien holders. And in fact, if the UCC has a single organizing or overriding principle, it is that every contract and every duty must be performed in good faith. The official comment to section 1304 of the UCC, which sets forth the good faith obligation, states that this section sets forth a basic principle running throughout the Uniform Commercial Code, and it applies generally to the performance of, or enforcement of every contract or duty within this act.
Mr. Warren, I do have a question about the good faith issue. What's the limiting principle in terms of good faith requirement in the UCC? I mean, is it just as completely wide sweeping as maybe you're arguing, or I guess I'm just trying to figure out where we would draw a line. You know, one argument here is that a lien is not valid because of the purported bad faith of Textron, or really also there's this issue of really competing priority of liens. But how extensive is the good faith inquiry here, if that question makes sense? Because it seems to me it could be used expansively in ways not contemplated by UCC.
So, Your Honor, I think that we trust our trial courts to grapple with these issues every day. They are, in their discretion, able to determine whether the bad faith, if it exists, warrants subordination of a lien. And there are many cases that we have cited in which courts have done just that. In fact, this court, in General Insurance versus Lowry, stated that considerations of good faith under the UCC permit the consideration of the lack of good faith to alter priorities that otherwise would be determined under Article 9. And in General Insurance versus Lowry, the court did that. It gave priority to an unperfected lien holder over an attorney who was involved in the same transaction and who kind of cut in line by perfecting his lien over the same shares of stock that he knew were the subject of the prior security interest.
Were there any acts of bad faith here directed towards the debtor?
The acts of bad faith here really were directed against the unsecured creditors, the investors who purchased the V-notes as investments in the debtor.
Aren't they the parties then that should be coming to court to argue bad faith?
Well, under 544 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code, Your Honor, the trustee stands in the shoes of unsecured creditors, including unsecured creditors who obtain judicial liens. So that enabling statute allows Mr. Bash as trustee to assert claims and to avoid transfers on behalf of, or for the benefit of, I should say, the unsecured creditors.
What do you think is the case that would be most helpful to your argument that the alleged bad faith of Textron here would permit the bankruptcy trustee to essentially invalidate the lien?
I think the U.S. versus Lowry case, the General Insurance versus Lowry case, in which this court said exactly that, is quite helpful. In that case, this court was quoting Thompson versus U.S., an Eighth Circuit decision, in which that court held that priorities could be altered based on insider transactions that have been engaged in by a secured lien holder. There is the Lemoore versus Diamonds case, in which, again, the court said priorities could be reordered, that a prior lien, that is, perfected lien could be subordinated based on conversion of diamonds that served as collateral. There is the Farm Credit versus Eason case, where a secured creditor misled other creditors about the priorities of its own lien, and that was held to be sufficient to at least allow the court to consider reordering priorities. And there are other cases, for example, Affiliated Foods versus McGinley, where they misled creditors about the borrower's financial strength and thereby induced those creditors to extend credit to their own detriment.
Are any of those cases, though, did someone like a trustee act as a proxy to assert those claims on their behalf? I mean, I'm still, maybe this is Judge Bush's question, kind of, but I'm still wondering about the bad faith directed toward specific creditors or the debtor that then someone else, like a trustee, then asserts essentially on their behalf as kind of a proxy.
Yeah, and I guess I would like to also clarify a prior question or an answer to a prior question. The bad faith here was directed to unsecured creditors. It was done in concert with the principles of the debtor, but it actually worked to the detriment of the debtor as well, because it allowed those principles to loot the investment funds that had been placed with the debtor to the tune of over $100 million during the time that Textron was loaning money. And Textron was aware of that looting, which really took the form of phony loans to entities that were owned by the principals.
Right, but I guess I'm thinking of, like, for example, that Georgia case with the peanuts or whatever. That one seems pretty clear that the bad faith actor was inducing the other creditors to do something. And then the court said, well, in that situation, those creditors might be able to jump ahead of them, ahead of the bad faith actor. And I'm struggling to see how that's this case.
Well, the difference I think that you're noting, and I think correctly, is that that was a priority contest between two competing lien holders. Here we have a trustee who is trying to hold the lender, Textron, to its burden of establishing that its lien was valid. And based on the definitional statute and the text of that statute under UFTA, in order to establish the validity of its lien, Textron has to show that its lien would be effective in such a priority dispute, as was an issue in the
community. Yeah, no, I'm granting you that the priority thing is relevant. Like, I accept that the priority could be a relevant consideration here, given the text of the statute. I'm just saying, assume we're in a priority world, it still doesn't seem like, this case seems different from all of those other cases in the sense that there isn't the person who is the victim, the direct victim, let's say, of the bad faith is not the one that's sitting in front of us, other than the argument that the trustee can be essentially, I'm saying, a proxy for those victims. But I'm looking for support for that, legal cases, whatever it is, that would support that kind of trustee as proxy view.
Right, and what we're really relying on, Your Honor, is the text of the statute, which very clearly says, in order to determine validity, you have to look to these cases, not where trustees are involved, but where two competing lien holders are involved, the holder of a security interest and the holder of a later acquired judicial lien. And the outcome of that hypothetical dispute determines or helps the court determine whether the lien that's being asserted here in this UFTA case is valid or not.
What is your, I'd like to get back to what the bad faith is, because as I understand it, there was no bad faith in the performance of the contractual obligations between Textron and the debtor. Is that correct?
The bad faith was in connection with the performance of those agreements.
What about the agreement did Textron do that was in bad faith to perform the agreement?
It used the agreement to help perpetuate an investment fraud scheme. So when it looked the other way, while Fair Finance was using the funds to maintain a front of a factoring business, while it was taking the investments that were supposed to fund that business and looting them, when it allowed those phony loans to continue, as long as those loans were funded by investor funds and not by Textron's own funds, that was bad faith. When it entered into a new loan agreement in 2004, rather than exiting the relationship like its lending partner, United Bank, did, because United Bank was not willing to be involved in this activity, that was bad faith. And when it did so at the same time that it agreed with the debtor's principals to continue concealing from the investors the information that they needed to know that these loans were even taking place, that was also bad faith. So the bad faith was not directed against Tim Durham and Jim Cochran. They were the co-conspirators. The bad faith was in the way they used this agreement. And the UCC applies this obligation of good faith in every duty, to every duty under the Act, and every contract under the Act. And there's no limiting principle that the bad faith has to be against one person versus another. The bad faith was against the company, who hit Fair Finance, who had entered into that loan agreement. And it resulted in the looting of $100 million of investment funds that were being held by Fair Finance. And I guess I'd also like to point out, Your Honors, that the alternative...
Sorry, Mr. Warren, your initial time has expired. You do have 4 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Okay.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Mitchell Carlin, Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, for Textron Financial Corp. Under Ohio law, as noted by this court, a lien becomes a, quote, valid lien, close quote, when it is perfected. 2 years ago, after this court's first opinion in this appeal, this court decided a Thermo Credit versus DCA. Judge Bush was on the panel. And in footnote 4 of that opinion, the panel states, quote, according to Ohio law, in order for a lien to be, quote, effective, close quote, against a judicial lien, the lien holder's security interest must be perfected. There's no dispute in this case that in 2002, Textron Financial was granted a security interest and perfected that security interest properly under Ohio law, and that it never became unperfected. We respectfully submit, Judge Bush may tell me I'm over-reading it, I don't know, he's here to tell us, but we think Thermo Credit is dispositive of the argument that the appellant is raising here. We set forth in our brief at considerable length uniform case law from Ohio state courts that is to the same effect as ThermoCredit. That is, that a lien becomes a valid lien under Ohio law when it is perfected. As to whether good faith has any relevance, there has never been an allegation in this case that in 2002, when the lien was granted and when the lien was perfected, that Textron Financial was acting in anything other than perfect good faith. That was made clear by appellant's counsel in his own opening and in his own closing. The allegation has always been that sometime after that, beginning in around 2004, we began to show a bad faith. Judge Harris and Judge Gaughan below had occasion to rule on or opine on the argument that the appellant is raising here. Judge Harris observed that the plain reading of the statute, that those are his words, were that a valid lien is a perfected lien. Judge Gaughan said that that was, quote, the only logical reading. Judge Harris observed, quote, the trustee has cited no case law interpreting Ohio's version of the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act that interprets this definition in a manner that would allow a lien valid at the time of perfection to be invalidated as a result of bad faith or some other misconduct at some later period of time. Section 9317 of the UCC, which in Ohio is codified at section 1309.317.
There's a question for you.
What do we do with, what do we do with these cases that suggest that bad faith can affect the priorities and a lien could be perhaps subordinated because of bad faith, like the case I was talking about in Georgia, if it's recognized that later bad faith could somehow relate back? I'm curious what we do with those cases, because they're certainly out there and they're decided under the UCC. What is your kind of response to that?
Couple of things, Judge. First of all, if I could just give some context before coming directly to your question, I want to remind the court that the original complaint here did have a claim against Textron Financial for aiding and abetting a fraud. And the trustee lost that claim early on and has never appealed from that defeat. And everything that we're hearing today from the appellant is really a repackaged, I wish I could have tried aiding and abetting a fraud because I would have won that. But that claim is gone and it was never appealed. What was tried, and the only thing that's being appealed, is an intentional fraudulent transfer claim. In the cases that the appellant relies upon, there are more than one lien holders who are quarreling over which one of them is first in line. In this case, there was no other lien holder. We were not only the first perfected security interest holder, we were the only security interest holder. There was no priority dispute. And even if there had been, and even if we had somehow been reduced to the level of second tier lien holder in some hypothetical situation that never occurred, we would still have a valid lien. When a bankruptcy court, I'm trying to be modest here, I've got Judge Cole on the panel, but when a bankruptcy court subordinates equitably a lien holder, the lien doesn't disappear, it just becomes lower in priority.
Is it possible that a lien holder could be subordinated below an unsecured creditor for bad faith? And are you aware of any instance where that's happened?
So the bankruptcy code has two different remedies available. One is subordination, one is disallowance. But yes, you can be subordinated below or to the level of equity, yes. Here, of course, there was never any such dispute We did have a perfected lien. There were no other lien holders.
Counsel, if a V-note holder had said, had come in and gotten a judicial lien, let's say, and said, I'm either in a priority dispute, or I guess I suppose that they could be in a fraudulent, they could say there was a fraudulent transfer. Your valid lien has to be, it, in order to be valid, it has to have priority against a later judicial lien by definition in the statute. But because you defrauded me, your bad faith was directed toward me and every other V-note holder, I can either set aside what you're doing as a fraudulent transfer, or maybe I'm in a priority dispute. I don't know. I'm in a hypothetical world here, obviously, but I'm talking about a V-note holder, not the trustee, but somebody that actually had bought later one of these V-notes.
Understood. I understand the question, Judge. So there was never a claim prosecuted by any V-note holder against Textron Financial, that's first. Second, Textron Financial never enforced its security interest. In other words, the priority dispute hypothetical takes place when the debtor goes into bankruptcy and some creditor comes to court and files a proof of claim and says, I'm first in line or I'm second in line or whatever I am. That never happened here. Textron was voluntarily repaid by the debtor 2 years or 3 years before the Chapter 11 or 7 case was commenced. We never enforced our security interest against anybody. I'm not sure. Have I answered your question, Judge?
Let's assume you have a V-note holder and they are making the fraudulent transfer argument, not the trustee. Okay.
That would be pre-bankruptcy.
Okay. Would they be able to talk about the bad faith? Would it be relevant to whether the Textron lien was a valid lien or not?
The Textron's good faith at the time the lien was granted is relevant. And there has never been an allegation, and there is certainly no evidence, because, the lien was granted the first day that the new owners owned the company, and everybody has always agreed that it was entered in complete good faith. So what would be relevant in that case would be, is the lien perfected, and was it granted in good faith? If we look at Ohio UCC 9317, and with the court's permission, I'm going to omit some words to make this simpler. Section A2A says a security interest is subordinate to the rights of a person who becomes a lien creditor before the security interest is perfected. Here, there is no such person. There is no such person to whom we are subordinate under the section that the appellant is urging controls.
But I take it your position just categorically is that any later bad faith is just irrelevant once I have a perfected security interest.
It's irrelevant in a fraudulent transfer case, Judge. It's not irrelevant under all theories of law in all courts in all circumstances.
Okay, is it relevant in a... Would it be relevant in a priority dispute?
In a bankruptcy case, where a bankruptcy court has wide-ranging equitable powers and there is a specific provision of the bankruptcy code that addresses subordination of liens and prioritization, reorganizing of priorities of liens, it could be relevant. But what Judge Gaughan and Judge Harris were perplexed by, and I agree with them, is what on earth that would have to do with this case and how it could overcome the plain language of the statute that that we're focusing on here. We were not in bankruptcy court, and the Second Circuit has held.
But don't you think that the plain language of valid lien has some priority thing going on? I mean, it says a valid lien is a lien that's valid or whatever it is against that's effective against a judicial lien or whatever it says. Why is that not a That looks like priority, doesn't it?
Well, but what all the Ohio cases that we cite in our brief and ThermoCredit say is that under Ohio law, and by the way, the case law in other jurisdictions is to the same effect. We give you a long, boring footnote with a lot of other jurisdictions, is that a lien becomes a valid lien when it's perfected, period, full stop. For purposes of fraudulent conveyance law, which the Second Circuit has said, do not import state law, fraudulent conveyance law does not import notions of prioritization and equitable subordination. That's a different area of law. Certainly also, if you were to bring a straight fraud case or a straight aiding and abetting a fraud case, which from what the trustee has said, you know, maybe he should have brought, maybe there's some relevance there. But this, we're on appeal on one claim, which is a highly technical statutory claim. And under fraudulent transfer law, the good faith of the transferee is tested at the time of the transfer, at the time the lien is granted. And you also have to focus on the intent to defraud of the transferor also at the time of the transfer. What the appellant here is asking the court, as a sort of quasi-legislature, to say is that from now on in Ohio, no secured creditor will ever know whether it's actually secured or not. Because if you take a 30-year mortgage and you've got a 30-year lien, and any time in those 30 years, without regard to the intent of the transferor, if the transferee does something bad, its lien will not be subordinated, will actually disappear. It will disappear. There's no case from any jurisdiction that remotely holds that, and it clearly is a recipe for mischief in an area like the commercial paper law, where the cornerstone is certainty. There has to be certainty so people know where they are and not float free for the duration of the loan.
So I guess this goes back to what we've been discussing already. But your argument is essentially that good faith is tested at the time that the transfer occurred, I guess when the lien was perfected, which was back in 2002.
Correct.
So is there no scenario where a bankruptcy trustee under using so-called strong arm powers under 544 and then the recovery powers under 550 could ever on any basis, including bad faith, seek to invalidate what was a valid or is a valid lien, but because of certain claims or conduct, can seek to subordinate that lien or invalidate it. I mean, there's no universe of.
I'm sorry, Judge. I mean.
No. You may answer. It just seems. That seems like that should not be the case, but maybe it is.
Well, spoken like a great bankruptcy judge.
Spoken like somebody who has a question doesn't know the answer.
The bankruptcy court certainly can in a bankruptcy case where two competing lien holders come to court and say I'm first, I'm second. And the debtor in possession or the creditors committee stands up and says, you know what, you're a bad apple and you shouldn't come first in the distribution. And the judge certainly has powers, and there's case law that governs when those powers come into effect, to reprioritize those liens. This is not that case. This has nothing to do with that case. This is a case where a trustee is saying to a perfected first security lien holder that was paid off 4 years, 3 years before the bankruptcy, voluntarily, never even enforced its lien, we're going to retroactively invalidate your lien and take back all the money you were repaid for your loan, because years after you took the lien, we say you did some things you shouldn't have done. There just isn't any case that supports that.
Could a trustee say, because of bad faith by a party, let's just say Textron here, that the trustee takes priority over Textron, let's say, and so if there's any money left after the trustee is paid and, you know, unsecured creditors are paid, then there would be money left for Textron. That might not happen in most cases, but essentially the trustee is arguing, as I understand it, that he is standing in the shoes of these V holders, these debenture holders, as well as Fair Finance, because it was defrauded as well. And so it's just step he's just step ahead of
we never filed a proof of claim in this bankruptcy case because we were not owed any money at the time the bankruptcy case was filed. One of the claims in the complaint, which was never tried, was a claim for equitable subordination and for disallowance. The trustee said, if we win on the fraudulent transfer case and you repay the money, which you'd be required to do under the fraudulent transfer claim, as you know, Judge, then we would get a claim in against the bankruptcy estate for the sum that we paid back. And the trustee said, no, we want that disallowed. We want that subordinated. That's all fine. But we never tried that claim. We never filed a proof of claim. We were not a creditor of this estate. That's why this case had to be tried to a jury. We have never consented to jurisdiction in the bankruptcy court.
Okay. Thank you. Your time has expired.
Thank
you very much. Mr. Warren, you have 4 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was on mute. I apologize. Counsel says that valid lien equals perfection, full stop. The word perfection is not in the definitional statute. The word effective is in the definitional statute. And by definition, effective embraces everything that could influence the outcome of a priority dispute between the secured party's perfected lien and a later acquired judicial lien. Textron's interpretation of this statute is not honoring the text of the words that are in the statute. Counsel also makes the argument that the validity of the security interest has to be tested at the time the security interest was created. That's not the case. We are not, in this instance, seeking to avoid the lien as being a fraudulent transfer in and of itself. That's a separate claim that we were making. In this instance, we're challenging the validity of the lien, which is being asserted against our claim to avoid a fraudulent transfer, which consisted of payments under the loan agreement. The transfers that are being avoided occurred post-lien, and that's the time during which you test the validity of the lien under UFTA, and that's a holding that this court made in Thermo Credit versus DCA. There was much discussion about the trustee acting as a proxy for the unsecured creditors, and 544 does enable and authorize Brian Bash's trustee to bring the claims that these unsecured creditors would have for fraudulent transfer. In fact, as counsel pointed out, post-bankruptcy, there's a big question as to whether these unsecured creditors could even bring these claims. And the conspiracy to commit fraud claims that the trustee would otherwise have were barred by imperi delicto, because in that instance, in those common law claims, the trustee is standing in the shoes of the debtor, and the debtor, through its principles, was committing the fraud that Textron had conspired to assist in. So all that's left is this statutory fraudulent transfer claim, and we are entitled to test the validity of the lien that's being asserted against those claims at the time of the transfers that we're seeking to avoid. Counsel talked about the uncertainty that would result from ruling in our favor here, and talked about the mischief that he thought would occur. The real mischief here is the egregious and horrific fraud that was committed by Fair Finance's principals and that Textron participated in by knowingly financing it for a period of 5 years. They financed it for a period of 5 years and they knew about it for a good part of that time.
Mr. Moore, can I ask you one question? You say that you could I guess, challenge each transfer as a fraudulent transfer. So would that require the court to look at each and every transfer that occurred under this revolving agreement from 2002 or maybe 2004 until 2007? I mean, there's so many transfers that occurred as the parties, you know, loan money and then the loans were repaid.
Yeah, theoretically, I think that's the case, but the bad faith.
That's got to be hundreds, if not thousands, of transfers, I take it.
Yeah, many, many transfers. But the bad faith that we would be proving that Textron engaged in was an ongoing course of conduct that, once it began, continued until they finally paid themselves off. And as counsel noted, they were paid off in full. And he talked about them not trying to enforce their lien. Well, they had a lockbox that was set up, and they just took the money every single day out of that lockbox. So they did enforce their lien in that respect, because without that lien, they would not have had that lockbox. But yes, the bad faith that we would be establishing would continue unabated for all that time and would apply to all the many transfers that we would be seeking to avoid. There would also be the opportunity to establish a Ponzi presumption here, which would apply to all the transfers.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Warren. Your time has expired.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. We do appreciate your arguments. I, at this point, can't see either one of you, but I know you're there. So, Mr. Warren and Mr. Carlin, thank you very much for your briefs and your arguments today, and the case will be submitted.